This podcast was created on Wurundjeri land. It contains discussion about adult topics. Welcome to Doing It. This is a podcast made by Sexual Health Victoria. We run a whole lot of education programs for communities and medical professionals across Victoria. We also run sexual health clinics in the city and Box Hill in Melbourne. My name is Anne. I'm part of the Sexual Health Victoria Schools and Community team. We run classes for all year levels on bodies, growing up, puberty, sex, reproduction, consent, relationships. This podcast is for parents and carers of school-aged children so we can share what goes on in a relationships and sexuality education class and help support these sorts of conversations at home. This episode features an interview conducted by Sam. It's with Krishna Dev Singh Ravalji. We can use Kano for short. Kano is the Youth Commissioner at the Victorian Multicultural Commission. He's also been recently awarded the Young Citizen of the Year Award at the Wyndham City Council and is the founder of the award-winning social enterprise Third Culture. Kano works with young people and multicultural communities to promote inclusion, equity, and leadership. He's able to provide a bridge between the voice of community and government decision makers. Kano talks about the importance of listening to young people.
Good morning, Kano. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk with me today. So, first question, can you provide an overview of your work as the Victorian Youth Commissioner and what led you to this work?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Sam. And it's interesting how it led me to this role. So I'm the Youth Commissioner at the Victorian Multicultural Commission. And our main duties are pretty much to celebrate diversity and advocate for diversity. So the way we celebrate is we host the gala, the Premier's Gala, Multicultural Gala, where about 1,000 people from the community come, the Premier's there, many other stakeholders are there, and we celebrate culture and the diversity in Victoria. And the big piece of work that we do is the advocacy piece. And so we're, if you can almost imagine, we're the conduit between government and communities. And so if the government wants to sort of, we did a big work in COVID time to pass on that knowledge, and we took the community's issues, concerns, and we raised it up to policymakers, the minister and the department. And the way we do that is we have regional advisory bodies spread all across the state, all across Victoria. And that's where my job comes in. My portfolio is the youth. And so I've got about 20 incredible young people in my multicultural youth network, very well established, strong advocates. And so my job is be guided by them, listen to sort of what they want, what are their issues, and then put that into an answer report and use the advocacy skills that I have and the expertise and the connections to take it up to government, to policymakers, to departments.
Yeah, amazing. And what led you into this type of work?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm a migrant myself. And so growing up here, always was caught between the two different cultures, not fitting in. And so I've always been an advocate for inclusion, for diversity, and you know, people being proud of themselves. They're part of their identity. And so that took the role of me doing my own advocacy, my own public speaking, and eventually I saw this role open up where I was like, oh, maybe I can take my advocacy to another level where this is where, you know, I want to be in those key decision-making arenas where big decisions are made. So I applied for it, and somehow I got it. So very, very fortunate to be in that position to, in my term, to have potential impact.
And can you tell us a bit about Third Culture and the work you're doing?
Yeah, Third Culture is interesting. Well, I'll tell you where the name comes from. So me being a migrant, me being here for almost 17 years now, if I go to India, where my country of origin, they'll say I'm not Indian because I'm too Western. If I say I'm Australian here, traditionally, I'm not Australian. So I'm a mix between the two cultures. And so that's where the word Third Culture comes from, where I'm not this culture. I'm in this weird bubble with a lot of other Australians and Victorians. So that's where Third Culture comes in. A lot of my work is based with young people, with different communities on how to better work with multicultural young people. How can we make services? How can we make organizations, businesses more accessible, more accepting, where every single person that walks in feel like they belong?
What does culturally safe practice look like when working with young people?
Yeah, that's a great question and a big question. And a lot of my work is based around, I would like to work with individuals. And so my biggest tip is, what is the outcome we're after? Because I think in Victoria, we're so diverse that as a parent or as an educator, we're not going to be on top of every single culture. We're not going to be on top of every single barrier. It's just too hard. And so I would like to say, what's the outcome we want? So we want we want every young person to feel like they're heard, to feel like they're accepted, to feel like they can feel safe to explore or be to learn these new topics. And that, I think that starts by making sure us as educators or us as parents are aware of the issues that are going on in young people's lives, so be listening to them, finding out what their issues are, and challenging our own biases. I think sometimes we have our own biases on what young people want, or you know what they can achieve. So challenging those stereotypes, those biases that we have already, and then working towards a system to address those. Whether that's looking at our resources in our organization, whether that's the way we've been taught, maybe that's not the best way to work with multicultural young people. So we might have to learn new ways and adapt to every single young person.
Can you tell us what is your advice about how educators can work with multicultural young people to ensure the information and education they're getting about relationships, sexuality and sexual health is culturally appropriate and meets their needs?
The biggest thing that we get taught is, I share a little bit my experience of coming in here. There's a lot of confronting things that you see, whereas in my culture, the Indian culture, the family that I grew up in, it's not normal to be in a love relationship. It's not normal to have a boyfriend, girlfriend, or another partner. It's not normal to hold hands in public. That's a very taboo thing. And to come to this country and see that, it can be a bit confronting. From me as a young person, you know, that gets used to it, going to school and that. But from the parents' perspective, that's very hard to see as well. And as a young person, being a migrant or a refugee or maybe a different culture, there's so many different things at play. Because you might go to home and there's a set of expectations. You go outside, there's a different set of expectations. So there's the faith plays a big factor, culture plays a big factor. And it's different to maybe how we've been taught as educators of, here's the principles that we need to teach to young people. They might not apply to multicultural people in particular. And I think we need to make sure that when we work with these young people, we don't impose our values on them or impose what we feel like is the right way to go about it. Because at the end of the day, young people, they're probably going through a tough times internally. You know, growing up, identity is playing a big factor. Fitting in is being a big factor. And we don't want to add more stress onto it. So I think our job as educators should be to be there to listen to them, listen to the concerns, support them, and figure out how is the best way I can support this young people. What's the best way I can support this young person? Because at the end of the day, everyone wants to be heard and recognized. And I think we need to create that space for young people to be heard. And then how can we make and address them?
And I wonder if you could, from your perspective, just talk to us a little bit about, imagine there is an educator in a classroom teaching relationships and sexuality education. Mm. And they become aware that a multicultural young person in their classroom is appearing uncomfortable with this type of content. What would your advice be?
What I would do firstly, Sam, is if I, as a teacher, I might know that some of these students might find this topic a bit uncomfortable, giving them sort of the warning beforehand or the, you know, heads up that, hey, when we're having this conversation, if you don't wish to participate for whatever reason, give them the choice. I feel like we shouldn't force them to sit in that uncomfortable position if they don't feel like it. So I think giving them the option. And also, I would love to, before we even jump into that, open up the conversation and challenge a little bit of those ideas. So, you know, I would love to see a teacher maybe open up the space and be like, what does a relationship look like for you? You know, is it because I think every culture will have a different form of relationship, you know, the romantic or the love type. What does that look like? What does even marriage look like? And I think just making sure that everyone feels like they're on a common ground. I know sometimes I've been in spaces where I feel like the way that's been, some things are taught to me, that's, I've never been seen that from that angle, or that's not something in part of my culture. So I think young people want to feel accepted and belong. So I think if the classroom or the group, there's a consensus reached on, you know, relationship doesn't just mean one type, there's different forms, or a sexual relationship would look like different forms. I think that adds a little bit of comfort. So I think establishing that common ground would be key. So I think sometimes as a multicultural young person, I would love for the other people in the room to know some of the barriers that I'm facing, just because it makes me feel a little bit more calmer. So I think having that opening discussion in school, it's hard to do, I must admit, but I think it would be really good. Mm-hmm. And the other part, if you see a student uncomfortable, I would love for the teacher to take the student out potentially, or a group of students out, just so you're not having that uncomfortable conversation in front of other students in the classroom. Because, you know, that's how the school environment can be a little bit, you know, you see a student talking to the teacher, all the students are listening in. So I think taking them out, and again, not imposing anything, let's have an open conversation. What, you know, is there something about this that you find comfortable? What is it? Sort of unpacking that a little bit, rather than imposing the value, sorry. Or the other thing that I see is making assumptions as the teacher of this multicultural young person is uncomfortable because of this reason, because of this reason, or because of their culture or faith. And I think not making those assumptions, rather talking to the young person, what's making you uncomfortable? What is it about it? Finding that out and seeing how can I change the way I teach, or how can I address it? So at the end of the day, the key information about, you know, general well-being of sexual health or relationship is covered off, rather than we might not be to the 100%, but meeting them where they are and giving them the required information that we need to give them.
Yeah, that's so great. And how can we amplify the voices of multicultural young people to ensure that relationships, sexuality, education is meeting their needs?
Yeah, great question. I think we need to amplify by listening to them and be led by them. We hear this word of co-design. We hear this word of youth-led being thrown out. But I think it's creating that space for young people, for us to hear from them and see what we need to do better, or we need to change from our services. And I think eventually the goal should be that we have tools, we have the mindset that no matter what young person comes in, whether it's a multicultural young person or whether it's another sense of diversity, we know the tools that we can work with them to address the needs, or give them the education that they need at their level. So it's, I think it's about meeting them where they are, rather than exposing, here's the expectation you need to hit. Let's talk to the young people. Let's see where they are, what level they are, and how can we work with them. And also, I love to see, you know, you do a program, there might be two or three young people who are excelling. So you might even be after the program, maybe 1 or 2 years down the track, touching base with them and feel like, hey, you know, you did this program. What do you think of it? What can we improve on it? We're trying to work with more young people. What could we do better? So I think it's about listening to them and also implementing some of the actions that they tell us.
Yeah, so following up and really thinking about that feedback later on is so important. Kano, you talked a bit about co-design. What does authentic co-design look like with multicultural young people?
Yeah, great question. I think authentic co-design looks like that when we're doing the co-design, there's a bit of intention to it. I think sometimes we throw out the word because we need to tick that box off, or we need to make sure we hear the young people. But I think authentic co-design, I am a bit young, and I've been a participant where co-design has happened. And I think the best practices are where young people are consulted, which I feel like happens a lot. They're informed, whether that's post or during. But I think the most key part is what they feel like they're saying, there's an impact to it, or whatever my ideas are, there's something that's happened to it. Or if it's not possible, that's communicated to me of, hey, you know, you had this great idea, but unfortunately we can't do that for whatever reason. So I think authentic looks like we're genuinely going to the young people because we don't know something. We're making assumptions that we're like, oh, we're not too sure. So let's go to them, talk to them and see what they actually want. Do they want to learn it this way? Or is there a different way they want to be approached? So I think once we get that, using that to better inform us, rather than doing it just because it's another thing that we should do, that intention is key.
And thinking about parents and carers, what support do parents, carers and families of multicultural young people need when the young people in their lives are receiving this type of education?
I think the biggest thing that parents and guardians may need is the reassurance that the education is not going to change their child or their young person. It's not going to drastically take them away from their values. I think that reassurance is very key, because I know from my culture, sex education or relationship education is not a topic that's really talked about in other parts of the world, especially where I come from. And, you know, it's looked at almost as a taboo topic. It's looked at as almost a negative topic, and to realize, you know, as a parent that, oh, maybe my kids are being taught this at school, it can be a bit scary. So I think there needs to be equal support for the parents to let them know, if you have any questions, here's what we're teaching in school. We're not challenging your views, or we're not, you know, changing what their view. It's just we just want them to teach them about how the importance of sexual health, just like physical health, just like mental health. It's another aspect of health that we need to. It's very important. We need to look after. And I think the other thing is, I would love to see, can we get the parents on board and be those champions in their own families, right? Sometimes we always wanting to address the young people and support them, but could we potentially empower the parents to take that change? Could we empower, I know it's a tough task to ask, I must admit, but I think there's certain parents in communities that we can really work with to champion that, because as parents, I know my parents would look to the religious leaders. They look to the community leaders to see, is this okay for, you know, my community or my child to learn? And if those leaders and those organizations agree and, you know, they accept it, I think you would see a big change in how the parents react to it, and then that will trickle down to the kids as well.
Thank you, Kano, so much for your time.
No, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Sam and Kano, for that interview. Some really key things which stood out in this discussion for me are: Kano invites us to challenge our own biases when working with multicultural individuals. Consider co-design as an option to meet the needs of the community. Invite parents and carers into conversations about the education that young people might be experiencing, and reassure that this doesn't conflict with their own family values. You can find Kano in lots of places on the internet. I will link to a couple in the show notes. One is The Third Culture, which is his social enterprise, and I'll also link to his LinkedIn bio. For more information about Sexual Health Victoria, you can go to shvic.org.au. Follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Contact us directly at doingit@shvic.org.au. Subscribe if you like the podcast. Leave a review if you can. Thank you so much for listening.